Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host, and today's guest is Dr. Mark Bricca. Dr. Bricca is a naturopathic physician, acupuncturist, herbalist, and teacher. As a child, he was a bone marrow donor for his older brother who had leukemia and who ultimately didn't survive from it. And since then, Dr. Bricca has developed a passion for developing a holistic, collaborative approach to cancer care at his clinic here in Portland, the Bodhicitta Healing Arts. He is talking about holistic cancer care, and if you have questions about holistic cancer care today on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Mark Bricca.
Thank you, Dr. Naiman. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about the term whole person cancer care. What do you mean by that? And I'm sure some listeners aren't familiar with it, and they're wondering, well, I'm going to an oncologist. Am I getting whole person mm-hmm. cancer care?
That's a great question. Let's see. I often use the analogy that cancer is like a weed growing in a field. And unfortunately, in conventional cancer care, in the predominant paradigm that we're still pretty attached to, we really focus almost 100% entirely on the weed. And we forget all about the soil that that weed is growing in and that enabled that weed to grow in the first place, right? And so for me, whole person cancer care is a paradigm, a new model that pays equal attention to both the weed and the field. And so I often say that by the time a clinical cancer is diagnosed, it's very important that we attend to the weed by all means. But it's also equally important that we attend to the soil. And so I kind of look at it's like three legs of a stool when I approach cancer care in someone living with cancer. And it's, of course, always totally individualized because you have one leg of that stool being the cancer. So you can kind of just take prostate cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer. And we know a lot about each one of those almost isolated in a vacuum. But then you have a person. So I say to my patients, we talk about the cancer, and then at some point, I always look at them and I say, now we're going to throw that out the window, literally, and we're going to see how we can make you optimally healthy, because the healthier you are, irregardless of the cancer, the better chance you're going to have to be able to marshal your own forces, immunity, detoxification, so forth, to heal from the cancer. So that's number two. The person. And then number three is, I'll call it maybe community, or in my model, I talk about, okay, if there's a weed and there's a field, then there's kind of, I like to say I'm a little bit of a farmer at heart. So then there's the weather, right? That weed and that field exist in, the larger weather. So that's the rest of your life. That's what's going on. You know, did you just have the most stressful year ever? What are your relationships like? What's your sense of purpose? What's going on in your heart? And also, as we begin this journey into the world of cancer care, then a really big piece of that, and what I'm really passionate about, and given the experiences I partook of and was a part of and saw with my brother, I'm really all about collaboration. And I really feel like part of why I'm here, my karma, if you will, my life's work, is to develop this new paradigm where we realize that medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, surgical oncologists, all of these people have a wealth to offer, a veritable wealth. And yet we need to, for me, cancer care is like a microcosm of the larger macrocosm of what's going on in our world today. We're all button heads, you know, and we're all saying, well, I shouldn't say all, but many of us are saying, you know, I'm right and you're wrong and I have the answer. And we're arguing instead of saying, wow, I don't have all the answers. You know, can you teach me? Can I teach you? Can we work together? And so I love it when I get to work with, you know, I have medical oncologists that I work with and they teach me about chemotherapy and I teach them about ways we can enhance their chemotherapeutics and make them more individualized and things we can do to mitigate side effects and so forth. And so that's the community. And that's where every patient then really gets held by this compassionate, comprehensive village, as it were. And that's what I mean by whole person cancer care.
So what's interesting to me is naturopaths have been putting forth the idea of treating the whole person, not just with cancer, but with a lot of illnesses for a long time. But just recently I had Dr. Susan Love on the program, who's a pretty mainstream conventional medicine breast cancer expert.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the mainstream science is catching up with the naturopathic perspective around this idea. She was talking specific to breast cancer that many people have breast cancer cells, never will become cancer per se, because the environment, or as you call it, the soil, never allows those cancer cells to do anything. So they just sit there, and you never know you have them, and they never do anything. But that if you have a horrible stress in your life, a chemical exposure, poor diet, you don't exercise, the odds of those cancer cells becoming a actual cancer are much higher. It's kind of fascinating that this idea, which maybe 10 years ago would have been on the fringe, is now something that seems to be becoming accepted in conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, it is. And the reality is, I think it's safe to say that it's the very, very rare person, if there are indeed any out there alive on planet Earth, that don't have some malignant cells in them. And so truly, it is the million-dollar question is, why is it? I always ask myself with every patient, why this cancer? Why now? What's going on in, again, that soil and in that weather? And how can we modify it? How can we change the milieu such that we can address the cancer? It's funny, Dr. Naaman, I practice with a dear colleague, and I don't know, maybe given my own experiences and what I see in my practice, sometimes I'll chuckle to her when someone comes in with a musculoskeletal complaint, a sprained ankle or something, and I'll say, geez, you know, this makes me a little more nervous than cancer does, because I feel like, I don't feel like we need to be as afraid of cancer as we are. You know, it's gotten to be the big bad C word. And of course, it can be terrifying. It can turn someone's life upside down. But I think a big part of that is because the way we're going at trying to, quote, cure it. And it's really a warfare-based model at present. And the reality is we've learned a tremendous amount about the conditions that give rise to cancer. That is, I think, the crest of the wave. And more of us in this larger community are becoming aware of that and are really excited that we now can work with that.
So when you talk about collaborating with oncologists, I would imagine a lot of oncologists sort of across the board feel uncomfortable with their patients using herbs or vitamins or other things that they might not be familiar with. And some of that might be a knee-jerk reaction because they don't know what these substances do with the chemotherapy or the radiation. But I'd imagine some of the, I know there are some substances that actually do interfere with radiation and chemotherapy. So when you're going to approach a relationship with an oncologist about enhancing the effect of chemo or radiation with natural substances, is there a lot of research behind the things that you're advocating?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And this is one of my favorite parts of my work, because I really do feel like I get to be a bridge builder, and I feel like it's an aspect of a much larger healing. So in some senses, I look at each and every one of my patients as an opportunity and a doorway for us together, my patient and I, to build those bridges, to heal, to therefore by extension help others. And just as every patient is different, every oncologist is different. Some of them already are very progressive. You know, I work with a number of oncologists that I collaborate to order tests with, and, you know, are absolutely, we're in lockstep together. There are others who absolutely, they're more skeptical, more cautious. And really, it's not about good, bad, right, or wrong. That is a byproduct of their paradigm, their many years of training, you know, their study of chemotherapy, radiation, the mechanisms of action, and so forth. But for example, you take just, I'll paint a couple of examples here just really briefly. Radiation therapy, there's an herb called Artemisia annua, or Sweet Annie, that there's wonderful research on appropriate use of that herb in conjunction with radiation therapy actually helps to maximize the effectiveness by synergizing with the mechanism of action against cancer cells specifically, while it protects healthy cells. And there's good research on that. What would be another example? There are many examples out there of, there's a big, one of the ongoing debates that sometimes gets quite contentious. And I always say to my patients, the last thing I want to do is get you in the middle. So, you know, it's about putting you in a place where you're well supported. But there's often a lot of contentiousness around the whole question of concurrent use of antioxidants, you know, so vitamin E, alpha lipoic acid, vitamin C, these kind of things, in conjunction with chemotherapy, and even more so with radiation therapy. Because the prevailing thought is a lot of these therapies work by creating oxidation, which kills cancer cells. And the medical oncologist question, or radiation oncologist question, is, and you're going to give an antioxidant? You know, you're going to make my therapy not work. And yet the reality is, when we really dig in and study the data that's out there now, across the board, there is really great data supporting the use of these therapies, saying that actually outcomes are better in terms of the cancer, in terms of mitigating side effects. But this is where we really have to be careful, because it's true, there are some very specific exceptions, i.e. don't mix this with that. You know, those are there for sure. And I think part of the problem is because we all, and I'm human too, and so I have my own blind spots and my own biases, and I have to catch myself. And that's where I often say that this work for me is a bit of a spiritual practice, because I have to see that. I have to be humble. I have to ask for help and all of this. Medical oncologists, I think, because of the intensity of their training, they're apt to just say all antioxidants are bad. But the reality is, there are many combinations that are really good. So yeah, there is data out there, to be sure.
We're talking today with Dr. Mark Bricca about holistic approaches to cancer care. If you'd like to join the conversation on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. Well, let's back up, Mark, and talk a little bit about what you were mentioning at the beginning, addressing the soil. If you have a patient come in, they're being taken care of by a collaborative oncologist that you're working with, what are you doing independent of the enhancing of chemo and radiation to change the climate that would allow a cancer to take hold in their body?
I'd point out two things. So let's say someone comes to me and they're already kind of beginning the conventional approach. Well, maybe three things, actually. So they've had a diagnosis. They visited an oncologist. They have the beginnings, or maybe they've begun to engage a conventional plan, whether that be surgery, chemo, radiation, maybe all of those sequentially. So the first thing I do is I spend quite a great deal of time in a first visit, because it's unfortunate that, you know, how can we really offer individualized medicine without the benefit of time? How can you really get to know someone, right? So we spend a lot of time, and one of the first things I do is I really want to make sure that each and every one of the people I work with really has a complete and comprehensive and thorough understanding of what are they actually looking at, you know, without, and this is again where it becomes a little bit of a practice and even a spiritual practice, regardless of ideology, but, you know, really trying to listen to what's important to the other person and make sure they understand a really big thing I'm passionate about, because as you know, we can kind of take statistics and really use them, bend them, make them malleable so they justify our point of view. And that's often done not with ill intent, but it is often done to justify chemotherapies and things like that. And I say, wait a minute, do you really understand, you know, do you really understand the difference between this relative risk and this absolute risk, so that people can make an informed choice? So that's number one. Number two is I tend to do a fair amount of pretty comprehensive testing that goes well beyond the basic testing that's often done in the oncology milieu. So there's certain things that I test with almost every cancer patient. Some of those being, I always test, in addition to just a complete blood count and a chem screen. I'll test kind of things that typically may not be considered within the purview of oncology, but actually make a lot of sense when you think about cancer from a physiologic perspective. So I test serum copper, zinc, homocysteine, ferritin, something called soluble transferrin receptor, a whole bunch of stuff to try and get a very precise as I can, window into what's going on with that soil. And a couple of just little examples of why I do that and how it works. Well, we know that one of the things that a cancer must do in order to grow, its lifeblood, if you will, is it must grow new blood vessels. Because once it gets beyond a few millimeters, if it can't do that, it can't grow. It can't feed itself. One of the things that it absolutely must do in order to do that is it depends on copper, because copper is essential for blood vessel growth. And very often, I'd say probably in 75% of my cancer patients with you name what kind of cancer, I'll do a simple test, serum copper, serum zinc, and the copper-carrying protein called ceruloplasmin. And zinc will be very low, copper will be very high, as will be the ceruloplasmin. So I give them just a moderate dose of zinc. And over a couple of months, typically I'll see zinc come up, copper and ceruloplasmin go down. And right there with that simple intervention, we can say we've just made it a lot harder for cancer to grow new blood vessels. So I do this kind of stuff, and that really enables me to then tailor therapies to change the soil. It's a lot like the way an organic farmer would say, oh, we need to add a little more compost, a little more organic matter, and then we're going to make it harder for the weeds to grow and easier for the broccoli to grow.
Is there an anti-cancer diet, or are the diets for different cancers radically different?
No. I would say that there is a general anti-cancer diet, and I can actually describe that very, very briefly. And then there also are specific foods. But the general diet, the big thing with cancer is we want to do everything we can to keep blood sugars stable, because cancer loves sugar. So right now, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, these things are really rampant. So we do everything we can to modulate blood sugar. Inflammation is also a really big thing. And the best diet for that, you know, after years of school, I used to be really picky and, you know, the diet was really kind of comprehensive. And now I just say to my patients, and it's the diet I try and follow, I kind of say, look, if you can really just avoid simple sugars, avoid too many carbohydrates, even the complex ones, eat tons and tons of veggies, eat a little protein at each meal, ideally clean, so we're talking free range, organic. And then a big thing, we have a really great deal of confusion in our culture around fat. Fat is not generally bad. And I even kind of shy away from the real low-fat diet and say, look, I don't want you to necessarily do the low-fat. I want you to eat good fats, so avoid the fried foods and so forth. That's the diet. And then, you know, there's certain specifics. Breast cancer, prostate cancer, I'll say, you know, yeah, I want you eating some soy. I want you eating some ground flax seeds. GI cancers, I really want to push the curry and the curcumin, the turmeric, these kind of things. Breast cancer, lots of green tea. But, you know, the basic diet is pretty simple. Just avoid sugar and eat good fats and lots of veggies, lots of cruciferous veggies.
And that would be a good diet for cancer prevention as well as for cancer treatment?
Absolutely. And preventing recurrence. Yeah. And it's a little bit different if you're in treatment. Then we have to modify it, because often, you know, at various points in treatment, people struggle with GI issues, nausea, diarrhea. And so then we look at composing more medicinal smoothies and easier to digest things. We find out it's a little bit like pregnancy. You know, people have certain aversions, and yet how do we get the calories in that you need, the protein to deal with the GI effects? Make sure that you're getting nutrients to promote proper cleansing and excretion of the chemo so that it can do its work, but then, you know, not make you feel awful. Make sure your bowels keep moving, you know, all of these things. So it gets a little different if people are struggling through treatment, because a real red flag for me is if, you know, someone's in treatment and they're starting to really lose weight and waste away. Often people don't actually succumb to cancer, believe it or not. Their bodies just get so worn down, you know, they lose weight, they get in this real catabolic or breakdown state, and that really is what pushes them over the edge more so than the cancer. So a big thing is, can we keep the person more in healing, build up, rejuvenation mode? And so a lot of what I do with nutrition and lifestyle, you know, and encouraging people to keep moving and stuff is entirely around that.
Do you use herbs with, let's say you have somebody who doesn't have cancer, but they have relatives that have, there's a cancer in their family, that prostate cancer or breast cancer is running in their family. Do you typically focus mostly on diet and vitamins and minerals, or do you put people who actually don't have cancer on herbs that have anti-cancer properties?
That's a fun question. My foundation, so I look at kind of a hierarchy of therapeutics. I always start with everyone with diet and lifestyle. You know, it's kind of like I look at it like we're building a house. And if you don't have a foundation, it's really tough to build a house. So that's the foundation, diet and lifestyle. And that when I say lifestyle, I mean movement. And I also mean emotional. You know, how's your heart, your relationships? From there, I actually, I'm not a big fan, even after tons of naturopathic school, of lots of vitamins and minerals. I think if you're eating a proper diet, it's much better to get them that way. And I will supplement with green foods and things like that. And this is, again, back to the individual piece, because I really want to know the nuances of an individual. So, you know, for example, I hardly ever prescribe, you know, a multivitamin and multimineral, but I will prescribe very targeted supplements. So like the zinc. If someone has homocysteine that's elevated, I'll prescribe methylation cofactors to get that in balance, because that's huge in terms of the cancer process. I work a lot. I would say what I do most of in my practice is with botanicals or herbs, because my experience has come to be that plants have a certain intelligence. I mean, we've evolved in tandem with them for millennia. We haven't really evolved with isolated synthetic vitamins. You know, we're used to getting our vitamins in food complexes with all the cofactors, but plants, I look at them as they straddle the worlds between food and medicine. So, and some of them are exceptionally powerful. So like I mentioned, the Artemisinin from Artemisia annuus, sweet wormwood. A stalwart, a real basic in all of my cancer protocols. And really, I often joke that, you know, if we came in with an owner's manual in the glove box, you know, for just basic being human, one of the things that I think would be good for everyone to take, but certainly is really important for almost all people with cancer or concerned about a cancer risk. There's a formula I use prepared by another physician who I have so much respect for and I'm studying with, and he's a friend, colleague, mentor. The formula is called Botanical Treasures, and it's a combination of curcumin and green tea extract and grapeseed extract and resveratrol, and it's what we would call a biological response modifier. So it basically, these various plants working in synergy have the ability to affect genetic expression. So it's very true. We hang so much these days on our genes. So someone comes to you or comes to me and they say, oh my God, I'm so scared. You know, my mom and my aunt and my grandma all died of breast cancer. Okay, I take note of that. You have a genetically increased risk. But it's far from fate to say that then therefore you're gonna get breast cancer. You know, it's just a given. You know, we ought to think about maybe a mastectomy. No, maybe we'll do the genetic testing. Maybe we'll look at BRCA1 and BRCA2 to really discern that risk. But so you have the genes. We know that genes can be turned on and off by affecting what is now kind of the cutting edge epigenetics, which is the terrain, which is the soil. And the way we do that best is with certain nutraceutical compounds, certain vitamins and minerals, but I think even better with plant compounds that really interact intimately and really effortlessly with our biology. So, you know, I mean, this fellow down at MD Anderson Cancer Center, who's done all the great research on curcumin, because they're using it a ton down there, which in my opinion is really kind of the best conventional complementary integrative cancer center in our country. They have thousands of patients in their hospital on chemo, on a very high dose of curcumin, because they see better outcomes and they're studying it. But this fellow has put together a number of interesting stuff, delineating the hundreds of different receptors and biochemical pathways that curcumin affects and modulates. And so, boom, right? There's one example of how someone can come and say, I'm concerned. And we can say, wow, we don't need to just sit idly by and wait and settle for a mammogram every year and do nothing until we find clinical cancer. We can do a lot to tend that soil and put you in a position where you really don't need to worry about it so much. While we, of course, continue the prudent screening and blood tests and all that.
Well, Dr. Bricka, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to the couple calls that are coming in near the end of our show. So is there somewhere people can call you afterwards or contact you through your website if people have more questions?
Yeah, absolutely. A half hour goes by really fast. So I love being a resource for folks. My website is probably a great way to contact me. All my contact information is there. I'll say it and then I'll spell it because it's a little bit of a tricky word. It's bodhicittahealingarts.com. Bodhicitta is a Buddhist word, and it's spelled B-O-D-H-I-C-I-T-T-A, and then healingarts.com. You can find a lot of information about how I work there, as well as contact information. I'm also always happy to find some time to speak with people on the phone. I'll just throw out my phone number. It's 503-274-5460. And people can feel free to contact me, and just, I'd happy to be a resource if they have questions, concerns, need help, need to find someone near them, whatever. I'm happy to talk a while.
And if you're in Portland and you have a cancer diagnosis and are wondering whether to add a naturopath on your team, it certainly is a great city to be in because we have a lot of oncologists and naturopaths working on cancer care in Portland.
Yeah, it really is. It really is kind of a fertile bed, I'd say. I'd say Portland is one of the places that's on the crest of that wave of really developing this collaborative, whole person, really heartful model of approaching cancer.
It was a pleasure having you on Health Watch today, Dr. Bricka.
Thanks, Dr. Naiman. My treat as well.
We were talking today with Dr. Mark Bricka of the Bodhicitta Healing Arts Center here in Portland, Oregon. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Radio Zine. Next up is Madness Radio.